Order. I'm probably 20 seconds early, but that should be okay. Chris, would you take the roll?
Councilmember Bruce?
Present.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item on the agenda is consent agenda. Questions or comments or motion or whatever is the council talk about?
Chris, you good?
I'm good.
All right. I would move we approve the consent agenda as published.
A second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is any further discussion? Chris, would you take a roll on that?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. That takes us to external reports. Update on Sheriff's Office and the relationship with CUNA. Sheriff Clifford, Ada County, thank you. It's back, so if it says it's backwards, so if it's red, it's on. I don't know why.
All right. Mayor and Council, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come up here and speak just a little bit about the Sheriff's Office and the relationship with the City of CUNA. Just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of overview if you don't know some of the things about the Sheriff's Office. I know you have a kind of intimate relationship with the CUNA Police, and we really enjoy providing services for you. Now, as I talk over here very briefly, this is not a pitch to say, hey, how great the contract is, but some of that will come out because just because of how it goes. But Chris, did you have the PowerPoint for that? Not overly exciting slides, but it'll help me keep my place. Thank you. Okay. So, in Ada County, we have one of the largest agencies in Idaho with Ada County Sheriff's Office. We, of course, patrol all unincorporated Ada County, as well as the cities of Star, Eagle, and CUNA, with which we contract. We patrol about a little over 1,000 square miles of land. We have over 3,000 miles of roadway. And people often ask, why do we do the contract policing? Well, it allows the cities to tailor police services and receive faster service to their specific communities. I always say, you know, every city kind of has their own flavor. So policing in CUNA versus Star versus Boise versus Eagle is a little bit different. They're all the same laws, but each community requires a little bit different type of service. So we're able to, instead of having an unincorporated group of deputies that just move all over the county, we can provide you with the type of service that you would like tailored to you. And by doing that, we also receive all of the resources that come along with the Sheriff's Office and the largest agency in the state. So there are over 800 employees that work across five different bureaus. Of those 800 employees, a little over 10% of those live here in the city of CUNA. The bureaus are divided out into very specific operations because we do so many different things at the Sheriff's Office. So we have our police bureau, jail bureau, court services, administrative, and communications. So I'll just go through those really quickly. And if you have any questions, you can either stop me or wait till the end. I'd love if you did have some questions. So police services are what all of you and the citizens are usually the most have the most contact with. With the sheriff's office, this, the people of CUNA will sometimes come in contact with the Sheriff's Office K-9 unit, our SWAT unit, narcotics, and all of those other resources that come along with the Sheriff's Office. Sometimes people don't realize that the parts of the police services that you don't see are our crime lab and our property room, the things that you as CUNA citizens don't have to worry about funding and caring for. And those are really big, really big lifts that require very delicate work. Another way to show how we benefit the citizens of CUNA with the resources, we recently had a stabbing here, was it last month, I believe, or earlier this month? Well, you don't just receive, you don't just get service from those deputies that work here in CUNA. You also get the benefit of additional detectives to come out and investigate the scene. So it's not just one or two detectives that come out and start trying to figure out who is the suspect, how did this occur. You get the crime lab that brings CSI. You get all the property management where all the evidence goes, and those extra resources for detectives. Code enforcement, you've recently taken on a code enforcement position. Because that's a sheriff's office employee, it was easy to take our code enforcement team and train them up, help them. I think they got rid of 80 or 90 cases, I think, right off the bat, just training your guy. So that's a really good example of the resources we have that can be dropped right into your city. And then we just implemented a junior deputy club. I'm not sure how aware you are of that, but it's a weekly after-school club for fifth through eighth graders that are interested in law enforcement, and it's really taken off, and we're getting a lot of participation and really good feedback from it. So jail services. This is one of those things that citizens don't often see. A lot of people don't even know where the jail is, even though it's right next to the mall. But this is the biggest part of my budget, and it's also my highest liability. We house, today's population in the jail was about 1,020 people, and we have to care for all those people. We have to give them medical. We have to feed them, clothe them, and then, of course, make sure and watch out for their welfare and safety as well as the deputies. So it's like a little city that's right inside Boise that people just aren't aware of. But it's a big piece of what a sheriff's office does in Idaho. Statutorily, the sheriff must maintain the jails within Idaho. So in some states, you'll see city jails and things like that. That's you can't do that in Idaho. The law says the sheriff must maintain the jail. Now, other things that go on in the jail are, we have educational services that happen, and we have a community transition center that we just opened. One of the things we do really well at the Ada County Sheriff's Office is it's going to sound counterintuitive because we want police officers to go up and scoop bad guys up off the street and put them in the jail, but we do a really great job here in this county of identifying people that should be outside the jail currently but be held responsible. So we have a lot of programs that I'll talk about next that help keep that jail population down. So 1,020 inmates today, and I'll talk about the Court Services Bureau that'll explain how many we are supervising outside the jail. So people don't realize that if you go to jail, you can get out on what's called pretrial. So you have to meet a certain criteria. And let's say you have a $300 or a $500 bond, and you're caught in this revolving door of, well, I can't get out of jail and go to work, so I'm going to lose my job, so I can't make any bond to get out of jail. And now I'm going to either recidivate, go back to jail, or at least I'm going to be broke. I won't be able to pay my fines. And then I'm just going to be back in jail serving time. So we identify those people through a lot of different processes, and you have to qualify for it. And some of them are on electronic monitoring. Some of them just simply have to come into the office every couple of days. So we say, okay, you're able to get out, but you will come in. We're going to give you breathalyzers. We're going to do all these things to make sure that you get to your court date and go to your job, because what we want you to do is be a productive member of society We don't want you to come back here, and we want you to pay your fine for the thing you did. So it's working very well, and we do a good job of identifying those people. One of the hardest things we have with the jail is our population is growing so much. I mean, you all are aware of that. Every city, the population's growing. We do such a great job of identifying all these people that don't belong in long stays in the jail. But the population's growing, so the people that do belong in the jail, that population is also growing. So the inmates that are in our jail have become what I'd say our hardened population over the years. So it's kind of a math problem where you say, well, this little percentage of the population belongs in the jail. Well, as the population grows, that number, the percentage isn't going up because it's still really safe here and it's really clean and it's a really great place to live. But because the population goes up, the number goes up, not the percent number, but just the number of people. So our jail's kind of busting at the seams. But because of those programs, we have about, let's see, so 1,020 in the jail. We have over 2,000 people, about 2,500 people that we supervise outside the jail to make sure they're going to court. And that includes 1,200 probationers, the SILT crew, people that you see picking up trash instead of serving their time in the jail. They can come in and do that. The pretrial is about 650 people. And then our transition center holds about 36 right now. That's a new program where people can go and learn job skills. It's kind of like a work release program. They can go to their job, then they got to come back to the transition center and stay, and they can also get programming, get a GED, and those types of things. The Court Services Bureau also does a lot of other things. We are in charge of the security for the courthouse. So we have a full crew of deputies that do nothing but make sure that the courthouse is safe, make sure that the judicial process is safe, and that all of those different offices within the courthouse are operating we don't supervise the operating, we make sure they stay operating, but make sure they're safe. So big crew of people in there. We have about 30 deputies that operate our transport team, and that they do nothing but transport inmates to and from court and to hospital visits, doctor's visits, some more of the behind-the-scenes things that people don't really realize. There are deputies every day all over this county with inmates with them, uniformed deputies, taking them to all kinds of appointments that have to be done outside the jail. So if you're having a baby, we don't want you to have your baby at the jail. Well, when that baby's coming, a deputy goes to the hospital, they get in a gown, and they stand in the room while you have your baby. Surgery. We have deputies that have to get gowned up, duty belt, wearing what I'm wearing, and they go in with surgery with people. So it's kind of a strange job sometimes, but we also have people that we send to Florida to pick up people that are supposed to be in custody in Idaho. We had a Puerto Rico thing happen recently that was really weird. We sent people to Hawaii and all that kind of thing. Coveted positions to go to Hawaii to pick somebody up. And then the sheriff also by state statute has to deal with all civil processes in the county. So if you have a garnishment or an eviction, or you just have a civil, some kind of civil paperwork that needs to be filed, people don't realize that the sheriff's office has to do that. So we have a whole civil team that works in this Court Services Bureau that performs that function. And then our training unit is also in this bureau. So, you know, we have 800 people. It's over 400 people that are sworn uniformed deputies. And so when you need to go through academies, we run our own state academy within our agency, both in detention and in patrol. So we need a whole unit that is able to train those deputies to get them going into the training program. And then we need a lot of training as well. You know, it's the public has said, we want you to do the right thing at the right time all the time. Well, that takes a lot of training. So our training unit is busy, and it keeps us busy. Administrative services, this is all, not all of it. This is all the fun stuff like finance and data analytics and things like that with it. People don't really think about, because you think about sheriff's office, you think about uniformed deputies. But we have a lot of people that are dealing with victims, providing information to agencies all over the state about what's going on here in Ada County so that they can model some of the things they do after what we do. And then fleet services, we have, I don't remember how many vehicles we have, but all those transport vehicles, all those patrol vehicles, vehicles for administration. We have our own shop on site that where we employ a fleet manager and five mechanics, and they're busy all day long taking care of cars, you know, oil changes, tire changes, this broke down, any new windshield wipers. We have a one stop right at Barrister where we can drive in and say, my patrol car's doing something funny, and they fix it. So it's a really slick, really slick gig. And then, of course, human resources. This is, you know, who does all of our hiring. We're pretty proud of our hiring process. It's not easy to get hired on, especially as a commissioned deputy. And so human resources really has our hands full. Communications. So if you didn't know, the Ada County Sheriff's Office, we have the largest dispatch in the state. We dispatch for every single agency in Ada County to include fire, police, and EMS. That includes CUNA Fire and CUNA Police. So it's a big, big operation. Last year they did about 390,000 calls for service into the dispatch center. We built this dispatch center a few years ago. It's really high tech. We did a smart job of planning for growth, so there are spaces in there to add more terminals and places for servers. And people really look to our dispatch center from all over the state to do modeling. And we just had Nez Perce County say, hey, we really would like to see your dispatch center. Will you send us the blueprints at least? And so we oblige so they can have a look and see what we're operating out of. So that's a quick and dirty rundown of the sheriff's office. Our mission statement is right there. We make safer places for you to live, work, and play. And I always kind of joke that if you go to a lot of agencies around the United States, especially police agencies, and you ask, well, what's your mission statement? And it's all these sentences of really fancy words, and, you know, officers need to memorize it. And by trying to memorize all those things, you lose the meaning of what it is. And I went to an advanced field training officer class years ago, and the instructor said, how many of you can name your mission statement? And there were two Ada County guys in there, and we raised our hands, and there was, I mean, Caldwell, Nampa, everybody all over the valley, nobody could raise their hand and say, well, I can't recite it right now, I need to read it. And he said, well, what is it? And I said, we make safer places for you to live, work, and play. Everyone in the room said, that's not what it is. That is not your mission statement. Yeah, it is. And that instructor was ecstatic because he said, it is simple and to the point. It is easy to fulfill if you're doing the right mission. So that's kind of where we sit. And if anybody has any questions, I'd love to answer.
Questions for sure?
No, thank you.
Thank you for the great presentation.
All right. Yeah, I just want to say it's been a great relationship that we've had over the years, and I can't be prouder of our CUNA police officers. They do a great job. They do a great job of interacting with the public, and they really do care. It's obvious, and so I enjoy the camaraderie and just the way they take care of people. So.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, I appreciate that. It's nice to be able to work in a place where, you know, these deputies, they have some choices of where they want to work. It's not just where a normal municipality where it's a part of town. They have places all over the county that they can choose, and we allow them to choose, do you want to work in CUNA, Star, Eagle, or unincorporated, north or south? So when it's time to fill a position, you say, all right, who wants this position? And you get a deputy that wants to be here in CUNA. They're part of the largest agency, but they want to come here and work at CUNA Police. So I think it helps build that relationship. And having police officers that want to work in this city, it makes them part of your, much more a part of your community, whether they live here or not.
Yeah. Thank you. Good.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate it. Next, we have Valley Regional Transit presentation and report update.
Do you have our presentation in the council packet? Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you for having me, council members and mayor. My name is Stephanie Herstein, and I'm with the Transpo Group, and we are working with Valley Regional Transit and the City of CUNA staff on the CUNA Transit study. I have here tonight also Alyssa Tyson from Valley Regional Transit, who's our project manager, and she's also a resident of your city, and Chris Tites from Transpo Group, who's our senior transportation planner. Next slide. So we just wanted to go over the project team, the goals and objective of the study, get your input as we're working through this study, the study scope, talk to you about how this relates to planning that Valley Regional Transit has been doing, and the project schedule. And when we think about transit, it's not your traditional transit study. We tailor transit to the community. So we understand this is a smaller community. You're looking to help serve your community, have community transportation to help with congestion, to help with the growing needs, and to help the community members that may not have transportation options like transit vehicles. So that's what we're thinking about when we're thinking about transit for CUNA. It's not the fixed route traditional that you might see with the bus stops. It's more of the on-demand, so your community can get around when they don't have personal vehicles. So as I mentioned before, my name is Stephanie Herstein, and then I'm supported by a team of engineers and planners at Transpo Group. We are a consulting firm that focuses on working with medium to small communities on transportation planning and specifically transit. We're also supported by a consulting firm called TMD, who will help with scheduling and developing alternatives for transit in your community. So we've developed some project goals and objectives and would love your input on these. The first goal is to provide transit to serve workforce, youth, and senior populations. And especially as we conducted our stakeholder engagement, the youth and senior populations where they don't have as many transportation options, personal vehicles, as others in the community. We also want to develop a plan that looks at both near-term and long-term. This community is growing. It's changing a lot. What we see today is not going to be the same as what we see 5-10 years down the road. So we want a plan that addresses your needs now and also looks at your community long-term. The plan will also look to outline what policies, programs, and elements can you incorporate into your city comprehensive planning and planning documents so you can implement this as you move forward. And then understand, how are we going to fund this? What are the options for funding such a program? So our scope of work, it is looks at stakeholder outreach. So we are starting to talk to the community senior center, the school district, the Boys and Girls Club. We've reached out to some of the workplaces in the community to really understand what do the people of CUNA need in terms of transit. We're also reviewing your local plans. What are the policies and what is the community planning been thus far related to transportation and transit? We're conducting a market demand study. So we're looking at what does the population look like in the area, the incomes, the vehicle ownership. What are the populations that might take transit? And then we will develop alternatives for transit in the community. And as I mentioned before, this isn't your traditional fixed route. It's what are the community-based transportation options, on-demand type services, dial-a-ride, that might help support the community? And last two parts will be to develop an implementation plan and ultimately a study that will be published for you. So this transit plan is being coordinated with Valley Regional Transit Planning. They're currently updating their transit development plan. And so we will incorporate the results of this study into the region's transit planning and the service that Valley Regional Transit is providing. We've outlined the schedule for the transit development plan, and our schedule aligns with this. There will be a public draft in May of the transit development plan, and then June and July will receive comments, and in August, the Valley Regional Transit Board would review the draft plan and approve it in October. So the schedule for the CUNA project you see here, we began our work in January, and we're currently working on the outreach and understanding the community. We've spent a couple days here driving around, understanding what does the community look like, and then talking to city staff. We are looking at the market demand analysis, and we will be here in mid-March getting into transit alternatives and looking at what might be feasible for the transit in the community. So thank you very much for having me here, and I would love to hear your questions, thoughts, input.
Okay, questions for Stephanie. So when you talk about market demand, how do you study the market demand when there's not something really in place already? I mean, how do you figure that out?
So several things we're doing for market is we look at your census data. From the census data, we can understand what is vehicle ownership, what are incomes. We look to understand where do people work, how far might they travel to work. And then also the biggest thing that we are doing to get a handle on the market is interviews of people in the community. So those just talking with the senior center, talking with the school district, the Boys and Girls Club, and other community members that will provide input.
Okay, thank you. And,
what's the process once you get to where it says, you know, the public outreach? Is it something you put in the paper? Do you advertise? How do you get the public's input on it?
So we've been working with the city, and we've actually identified key folks in the community to interview, and we've been just conducting one-on-one interviews with them. There will be a separate process with the transportation development plan that Valley Regional Transit would do, and that will be a bigger outreach where they would advertise in papers and publish.
Melissa Taysom with Valley Regional Transit. So what we'll be doing is we'll be putting out surveys, we'll be doing tablings, we'll be broadcasting through social media, that sort of thing, to do our outreach on the transit development plan.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything further? Mm-mm. Okay, thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
Next is the City of CUNA 2021 audit presentation concerning audit results. Welcome.
Red is on. Thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Dave will hit it for you.
All right.
Dave's an expert.
Okay. So you should have received a PDF version of the financial statements and our audit reports. So the audit report starts on page 3. And and that is where our opinions are located on the financial statements, and you can see a summary of opinions down at the bottom of that statement. So there are a few of the, your opinion units that have qualified opinions, and it's the same thing it's been for the last few years. Is there's not been an actuarial study or a calculation done to determine what your other post-employment benefit liability is. And so your opinion units that have payroll in them, where there is health insurance and those kinds of benefits, create this issue. So that's why some of the opinion units still say unmodified, because they don't have payroll in them, or they're fund financial statement basis that wouldn't report that liability anyway. So, for example, your general fund. The general fund opinion unit is unmodified, but the governmental activities, which encompasses your general fund and all of your special revenue and other governmental funds, has a qualified opinion. Because at that point, then we're reporting on a different basis of accounting, and so that liability would show up there. And the next page of that report sort of explains that opinion, and then has the official language for the qualified opinion and the unmodified opinions. And then there's a paragraph right in the middle there that talks about a change in accounting principle. So you're going to see one new financial statement in your financial statements that is a change in how you have to report your fiduciary funds. So formerly this fund was called an agency fund, and now it's a custodial fund. And this is the fund that holds impact fees that you pass on to other agencies and developer fees that get returned to the developers. And I'll show you that statement when we get further through this. And then the last couple of paragraphs there, they talk about some required supplementary information that's in your financial statements. We don't express opinions on those, but the information's there for you to see. And then there's also a paragraph there that says there's supposed to be a management's discussion and analysis. It's not there. It's also not audited, so we just have to point out that it's omitted. At some point, your city treasurer could choose to do this MD&A, and if they choose to do that, then we can provide guidance on that. That although we prepare the financial statements for you, that is one section that we've been told that basically the auditor should not prepare that. That really needs to come from the treasurer on that. And then the last paragraph there on that page tells you there is some other supplementary information in your financial statements that we do express an opinion on, and that's for your combining non-major funds. And those are just funds that are small enough that they're not required to be presented by themselves in the front of the financial statements. And then there's some budget, some more detailed budget to actual schedules in there that, because the budget's in it, it's not considered audited, but it just provides you a little more line item detail on what makes up your income and expenses in your general fund. And then the last paragraph on that page 5 is telling you there's another report that we need to go over, and that is clear back on page 46.
You don't have to scroll to it. I'm going to go really fast on it.
Okay, so this report is the report that tells you that your audit was conducted under government auditing standards. We test internal controls and compliance. If we found issues with those, they would show up as findings in this report. There's no opinion expressed on internal controls or compliance. You don't have a single audit this year, so there's no opinion expressed on any federal programs. You will have a single audit for fiscal year 22, so that report that you saw last year will show up again in 22. We had no findings for you, so that's just standard language in that report. And then I'm just going to hit a couple of highlights, if that's okay, rather than go through all of the financial statements.
Yes, please.
Okay, so Percy, we're going to flip to page 37. You don't need to scroll through this. Page 37, you can see on page 37, this is one of your required supplementary schedules. This schedule will eventually be 10 years long, and so you'll see what you've contributed to Percy for the last 10 years. So right now, this schedule started in 2015. So we're getting there and might have to make it expand down the page or to another page because I think it'll be too small to read if we go a full 10 years on one page. So you can see that your contributions as your payroll has gone up, as rates have gone up, is increasing every year for your contributions. And then if we want to also just want to point out on the page before this one, on page 36, this has to do with your net pension liability that essentially says if Percy's not 100% funded, you would have a liability. This past year with their actuarial valuation that they had done for the net pension liability, they were determined to be over 100% funded. So there's actually a net pension asset on your books of about $60,000. So yay, Percy. And let's see, your new statement is on page 21 for that custodial fund. And it's a pretty simple statement. It just shows additions and deductions so you can see what went in and what it went out for your impact fees and for your payments to your developers. And you also have a new fund this year. And if you want to flip to page 22, there's a little blurb in there in the notes about your urban renewal agency that's been reinstated. And right now it's presented as a special revenue fund, capital projects fund, actually, in your financial statements as a blended component unit. So it shows up as a fund instead of a separate entity like a discretely presented component unit would be. And the difference is that in order to become a discrete component unit, the urban renewal agency will need to stand on its own and have its own books. So it won't be part of, it's not going to be managed by essentially management of the city. There'll be you have staff for that right now, but they're not managing the books for that. So once that happens, you start getting in your tax increment revenue. It may end up moving to a discrete. And then there will be a separate, completely separate audit for that urban renewal agency. We do a separate audit now, essentially, because we audit that specific fund, but it just wraps all up into your financial statements. And it still will show up in your financial statements once it's discrete. It's just going to be, it'll have a column all by itself that you don't have right now. Right now, it's in your non-major funds, and it's clear back on pages 44 and 45. And so you'll see your urban renewal presentation there. And right now, there was no revenue that actually came in 21 for the urban renewal agency. Your levy, the revenue that's going to come in from that levy will come in fiscal year 22. And you can see on page 45 that there's a receivable there, but it's also essentially deferred because that money's going to finance fiscal year 22. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Okay. Questions? You always do a really good job of explaining that, so.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I have none.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Public hearings. Case number 21-12-AN and annexation Boise Basin Merkowitz. Doug Hansen.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The application before the evening is for the annexation of approximately 51.67 acres located at 5055 East CUNA Road. The applicant is proposing an R4 medium density residential zoning district classification in accordance with the comprehensive plan and future land use map. There is no development associated with this application. Idaho Statutes 50-222 grant cities with the authority to annex lands which are reasonably necessary to assure the orderly development of Idaho cities in order to allow efficient and economically viable provision of tax-supported and fee-supported municipal services to enable the orderly development of private lands which benefit from the cost-effective availability of municipal services in urbanizing areas and to equitably allocate the cost of public services and management of development on the urban fringe. Following review, staff has determined the request is within technical compliance of Idaho State Code and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan to request annexation. If the council approves the annexation, staff would recommend the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in section 10 of your staff memo, as well as any other additional conditions this decision-making body decides to impose. I will stand by for any questions.
Okay, questions for Doug? And do we... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Okay. And do we have the applicant? There's Chase.
Correct. All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, good.
All right, good evening. My name's Chase Craig at 5055 Cuna Road, Cuna, Idaho, 83634. And I just want to thank the mayor, the council members, and staff for having me at the meeting today. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the project we are looking to annex in as R4 into the city of Cuna. So as you may or may not know, this was previously presented in the past, and we heard the feedback that the higher density was, you know, not desired in that area. It was presented as R8. And having had the opportunity to meet with the neighbors, we've updated our project to reference the lower density that would be a better fit. And it seemed to be received very well with the neighbors. It's also in alignment with the city of Cuna's comprehensive plan and future land use map, which obviously had a lot of time, energy, and effort put towards it. We agree with the city of Cuna that medium density residential makes sense in this area, and even though it allows for up to 8 homes to the acre, we are only applying for an R4 designation. As Doug mentioned earlier, according to Idaho Statute 50222, staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission have determined that this will comply with orderly development. It will meet the requirements for that. And I'm just going to hit on a few highlights of the project. A couple of things that came up in past meetings when this was presented in front of council were, one of which was the easement for the septic on Marco Lane. Do you have that photo?
That wasn't submitted early enough to make it into the packet.
Okay.
For the record.
Well, imagine with me for a second. There is an easement to the east of this property on one of the sections of the Markovitz property. I just want to make it extremely clear that that easement will stay in place. And, unless the homeowners at some point in time in the future wanted to annex and, get rid of that, there's nothing will change there. We've been working closely with the neighbors there, and everyone seems to be on the same page with that. Another thing that came up was city pressurized irrigation. I want to make it very clear that all 51 acres have water rights for pressurized irrigation. And through the course of development, we would actually evaluate how much water rights are needed for irrigation purposes. And, of course, any unused portion has the possibility to be relinquished to the city of Cuna and for wherever their needs may be. Obviously, I've mentioned cooperating with the existing neighbors. We're not submitting any plans or plats or anything like that at this point in time. We do intend to work with them through that process after annexation. So in conclusion, this is a low-density project. It satisfies the orderly development. Ultimately, it will increase the tax base for the city of Cuna, and we can have a quality project for the city to help generate much-needed revenue on the costly new infrastructure that happens to be going on Cuna Road there. Both staff and Planning and Zoning have determined that we meet the required standards and policies set forth in the city code. And lastly, something that's really close to me, this project can assist in the need for affordable housing. The average sold price for Cuna in 2020 was $327,000, and the average sold price in 2021 was $447,000. So in 1 year, we saw a pretty massive increase, and the number one reason for that, as you probably know, is supply and demand. And we just lack inventory, and this would be a project that would allow for up to roughly 200 homes to help ease the burden on the city of Cuna. And with that, I will stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Mr. Craig. All right, nothing right now, thank you.
Thank you.
This is a public hearing, and I did have some folks. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign in on the sheet that wishes to testify in this matter? Okay. So we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. The first one is Rick Pate. Is that correct? Oh, good.
Just a quick question regarding the Markowitz area. As you know, the sewer and water line went down Cuna Road, and during a previous hearing, the applicant stated that he was, I live in the Markowitz area, and we have the option of switching over to the sewer and the water. Currently, we're on well and septic system. He previously had stated that he was going to work with the residents if we decide to switch. And I would just like to know what that looks like, what he's actually talking about working with the residents. That's basically my only question.
Okay. I think we'll have to get clarification from either them or staff if that's been discussed yet.
Okay. It was discussed. There's a property for that I believe may have been annexed at the last hearing that adjoins this property, and that was when the statement was made. And okay. I'm just curious about what that means, because me and my wife, we might sell our house with all the influx of people, and just curious if the buyer, I'd like to let the buyer know what his options are. So basically, that's it.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We'll get that answered for you. Next, we have Michael Smith.
Oh, we got to hear from him.
Green is off. I don't know.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So, distinguished council members, Mr. Mayor, first I'll answer this gentleman's question, even though I don't know exactly, but I think what he's talking about is when Markowitz puts in a sewer line and water, so on, that they will have the option of joining and hooking up to whatever he puts in or not. Just whatever they want to do. But I just come to testify on behalf of the project. I own several pieces of property in the area. The property that they're talking about is unirrigated farmland, sagebrush, with the Falcon Crest development going in. I just thought it, you know, wanted to say that it makes a lot of sense to annex that and get something going on it, make it look good.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Any questions for Mike? Thanks. Next, we have David Reinhart with the Cuna School District.
Mr. Mayor, honorable members of council, David Reinhart, Cuna School District, 711 East Porter Street, Cuna, Idaho. We have a packet submitted to your, or we have a letter submitted to your packet that states the details, and I'll leave it at that. But I will say in general, the school district and the board, our board of trustees, is asking the city of Cuna to take very seriously annexations. We when this is built out, we really cannot support the growth without a bond. And again, people kind of tend to say, and we've heard here, bonds are part of it. They are, but in the state of Idaho, you'll remember that we have the highest threshold for bond, for a bond to actually pass at a supermajority of 67%. Takes the school district and takes the staff members of the school district roughly a year of their work to pass a bond. So we ask you serious consideration as you consider this annexation and all annexations. We will be far exceeding capacity without a bond. with things that are already approved. Annexations simply make it harder for us.
Okay. Did you have questions?
We can go through the list.
That's pretty much it.
Hey, Dave, I had a question.
Councilman Bruce.
With the current amount of neighborhoods that have already been annexed, the school district has, what's the plan to, obviously we want to be respectful of people and their, you know, landowners and what they want to do, but we don't want to put more of a burden on you as well. Have you guys, you and your board, discussed a plan, maybe a capital improvements plan moving forward? Do you have something like that in the works?
Councilman Bruce, we're deep into a capital plan. That capital plan does plan for the future, and simply put, it will ultimately lead to a recommendation to our Board of Trustees. That plan will be a plan that accommodates growth. The challenge is we're up against a steep threshold for passage.
Supermajority.
And it is, I think somebody said here once that it just, you know, they pass in Idaho. Well, they passed, last one passed by 11 votes. So that means that they have to run again. And, the concern with that, again, is that staff then, those of us trained in education, end up spending a year in educating the public on a vote that we're not allowed to support or go against. So,
and then also we had, I think it originally when we started talking about this, maybe at the end of last year, you had 0.6 kids per home, and then it was 0.2 for the Falcon Crest, and then I had an email that came out that said 0.5. Do we know what, is there something that changes the amount of kids? Or?
Sure. Councilman Bruce, I can simply say that West Ada School District has a planner that they pay to be on staff to analyze each individual house. They use as their regular number 0.7 students per single family dwelling as a general rule, and 0.1 in multifamily developments. So that's in a deep analysis of our neighbor. The sense we had from a planner that we hired 3 years ago was 0.65. We, at the previous development that you refer to where we lowered that, was at the request of the developer, who said big houses on a golf course, fewer kids. And so we in our own judgment said, that's fine, we'll lower it. But that was not a strict analytical.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anything further for David? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor.
So, again, was there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up who wishes to testify? Okay. Chase, would you like to?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. And to answer this gentleman's question, I think just to be clear, you know, annexation is, they'd have to choose that process and they'd have to go through that. And that's a choice, and there's, I believe, six individual homeowners would have to make that choice, and what that would look like, we'd be happy to work with them if they were all on that same page and path. I don't know if there's any updates on that I'm not aware of. At this point in time, nothing would be disrupted on their end in terms of using their septic and in terms of using their individual wells. None of that would change, and they are not a part of this annexation. So, at the point in time when we went to develop, if they were interested and annexed, and I think we'd be happy to work with them.
Okay.
But it could cause some, just depending on how you guys wanted to run your water and sewer, it may or may not be something they're interested in. So,
sure.
We'd be happy to discuss that. You know, in terms of the school district, I appreciate you, bringing that up. This is a difficult, conversation, obviously, because, there's when we're in a city and a state that's growing as fast as it is, there's always growing pains. So, you know, do we want to have properties that no one can afford because we don't have enough, or, you know, schools that are bursting at the seams? Just in terms of timing, I would suggest, you know, if everything went swimmingly, which it never does, the first homeowner might be in by the end of 2023. And I would guess, you know, with roughly 200 homes by the time this was built out, we'd be looking at 2026 to 2028, somewhere in that range, depending on, you know, who the builder is and obviously the market at that time. And I would trust that the school would be making a lot of headway. The school district would be making a lot of headway in that regard here in the next 3 to 4 years, because we're going to have problems if we don't figure that out. And then I one last thing I would mention in terms of annex property, I don't have these details, and I'd be really curious, but I know there is a lot of annex property with a certain amount of homes, you know, set aside for it without capacity for sewer at this point. So I'm kind of curious if that's weighing in the comment that was made by the superintendent. So yeah. Any questions?
Any further questions?
No. You answered mine.
Okay.
I apologize. This is one last comment. Sure. You know, as we're seeing this new infrastructure be put in for the last couple of years, we've been watching it get put in on Kuna Road. This will be one of the first projects to tap into it, at least off of Kuna Road. And I think it's going to allow for the opportunity for us to see this move in the pace that we need to move for the growth that's coming in this direction. Obviously applaud you guys on the big win with Meta. I know that it sounds like there might be some mixed feelings on that, but in terms of, to say the least.
That's an understatement.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're putting CUNA on the map at the very minimum, and that growth will continue to follow, and we think this is a great project at a great time. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. That's all I have signed up to testify. And if you want to have more questions for staff or everybody, we need to leave the public hearing open so we can do so.
I don't have any more for staff.
Negative. No, sir.
Okay. Then. Right page here. I would then move, if no one else has anything, that we close the public hearing and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to close the public hearing and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start. You know, I think we are where we are when it comes to all the opportunities we've discussed in the past, and when we look at this specific annexation, I have to really take into consideration what Mr. Reinhart said about the school district and the thoughts and how overwhelmed they have been and continue to be and how overwhelmed that they will be. And in looking at individual annexations and potential for the full build out and how many homes it's going to create and how many students it potentially could bring in, where the schools are already at a breaking point. This is something that, you know, I've been real vocal about for quite some time, and this thing is no different. And, you know, Chase does bring up some good points. The full build out will be 2026, 2028 potentially. And a lot could change between now and then, but we're also at a point where we can't assume what it will look like in 2026, 2028. And I think maybe that's why we are where we are today, because we didn't foresee the implosion of the schools the way that they have. And so that's really my thoughts when it comes to the big primary opportunity when it comes to this annexation.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, I think a lot of things. I think that it is one of the spots on the map that was a fill-in once we got the Falcon Crest pipeline done. It was kind of just a mess out there, some of it. So to say it would, I wouldn't say it would clean up the neighborhood, but it takes it from a weedy mess to, you know, something presentable. So we do have that in our favor. And we have services available right there, which a lot of times we don't, which causes a lot of heartache with road construction, whatever. That's already all done for this particular project. I do fully recognize the situation with the school district. Obviously, it's something the three of us all have to live with and deal with, having kids. So we have to weigh that in. But, where they're not even going to start building for a couple years, potentially, and the build-out's pretty slow on it, I don't see an issue with it.
I think at the same time, right, once it's annexed, it's kind of checking the boxes, like we all discussed. You know, there's no bar going back and discussing it, whether they pass it or not. But at the same time, I'd kind of like to have, it's their responsibility to have a plan moving forward. You know, they own the property. We want to make sure that we accommodate them. You know, if it were my property and I wanted to build, that's how I'd feel. But at the same time, not knowing where the schools are going to be, and knowing that we can't really say much after it's annexed, then it's just, you know, it's no way to go back and stop it. Then we do have a meeting coming up with the school district next week, right? That we could kind of discuss that and see what their plan is, and then look at it again. That way we don't have to go in and say no now. Maybe we, just a thought, I'm just thinking out loud. But I know once it's annexed, right, like we did with the other project, then there's just no way back.
Well, and one thing I forgot to mention was this originally kind of came forward as a bigger, a lot bigger project. And they have said, okay, hey, public outcry says this, let's tone it down a notch, and they did. So that weighs in favor of it, too, in my opinion.
Did the school have input at the last annexation? No?
I don't know on that one.
What do you think?
Oh, well, that sounds like a reasonable suggestion. If you would like to meet with the school district board and everything before we make a final decision here, we can certainly continue the hearing for a date certain so that they don't lose their efforts.
Because we meet with them on the 10th, right?
Yeah.
So we could...
So the very next meeting is...
Right. What's the calendar? And then we could kind of have a plan, you know, see what their plan is. Because at the same time, right, we want to be respectful of both people. What do you think?
Chris, do you know if there's anything too pressing in the next... You don't know everything coming for the next council meeting, but
I don't have anything overly pressing that I'm aware of at this time.
Okay.
So it could be tabled, and the public hearing is already closed, so there wouldn't be any new testimony. It would just be discussion with council.
Right.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that.
And that's the March 15th, I believe.
Yes, sir.
If my math is still right.
Well, I graduated CUNA, so...
No, Councilmembers, you know, it's something I think what you state is very, you know, very fair, because knowing that and after that discussion, it would weigh heavy on a, you know, a potential decision. So I'd be in agreement with.
And maybe they have a plan that would, then this would be, you know, a no point, right? It wouldn't matter if once they have kind of an idea of where they're going, then it wouldn't be a problem to say, you know, yes and move forward. What are your thoughts, Greg?
I would be in favor of just tabling it. I hate to put the developer and the all the parties involved out, but to reasonably do the right thing, I think it's the best move.
And then we give them a path forward too, right? At the, you know, after we talk with them, maybe we can work. Maybe they have a plan that would make this go along easier.
Right.
Mark, legal question. So if it's council's desire to continue this until the March 15th meeting, until after we've had a discussion with the school district, is that acceptable as long as we don't get specific to this project with the school district and we are just discussing a general plan with the school district rather than
details?
Mark Fivey, city attorney. I have a question on that. Will the meeting with the school district be a quorum?
So we're going to have the school district forum meet with the council forum, yes.
Okay. So with it then being an open meeting, I think you do need to steer clear of this. Obviously, the developer could, since it's an open meeting, attend to see what's discussed, but I think it's best to speak in generalities about just the overall
right.
issue without getting in particular and moving towards decisions on this. This application won't be an agenda item on that open meeting,
right.
So you shouldn't get into this at that open
meeting. So as long as the discussion stays general and not specific to this, then
yep.
it should be okay.
Certainly no motions about this application should be made.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's the desire of council, do you want to make a motion to continue this until the March 15th meeting?
I would so move we continue case number 21-12-AN until the March 15th meeting.
I'll second it.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And again, I'm sorry if this puts anyone out, but it's kind of will hopefully help us make a good decision on this.
Okay. And then, Rick, is Rick still here?
No,
he left.
No.
All right. Okay, that takes us to case number 2102-ZC, a rezone of First Choice Collision Repair.
Doug Hansen. Mr. Mayor, council members, for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The application before you this evening requests approval to rezone approximately 1.6 acres from its current zone of C1 neighborhood commercial to C3 service commercial. The subject site is located at 997 North Meridian Road. The applicant is proposing a C3 service commercial zone in accordance with the comprehensive plan and future land use map. This request is limited to the rezone of the property. No development is associated with the application. The applicant will be required to return for design review approval at a later date before construction of an automobile repair shop may commence. Following review, staff has determined the request is within technical compliance of Idaho State Code, CUNA City Code, and the Comprehensive Plan. If the council approves the rezone, staff would recommend that the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in Section 10 of your staff memo, as well as any other additional conditions this decision-making body decides to impose. I will stand by for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Doug?
Not yet.
All right. Did we have the applicant wanting to present? Oh, okay.
Council members, Mr. Mayor, my name is Craig Kolchak. My address is 4839 Mountain View Drive, Boise, Idaho. I'm here representing Todd Good and the Emmett Partners LLC, specifically for the rezone and the special use. The application, just like Doug mentioned, is just for the rezone and the special use. It has nothing to do with development with this project, but. With that in mind, I think that it's a unique opportunity to have a business like this in this area, since it's growing so much. the need for a quality repair shop, and auto body paint shop would be a good addition to the city of Kuna, especially with the Flatlanders coming up and the first snow. There's going to be a lot of business.
Need more body shops.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Questions for Craig?
Thank you.
And I didn't have anybody sign up to testify in this matter. Is there anybody who wishes to testify that didn't get a chance to sign in?
I didn't get to sign up.
We got you. All right. Well, we'll open the public hearing. It's up to council to ask questions, whoever you want.
I don't have any. So. I just got a question for Doug. You know, when we look at a C3 service commercial zone surrounded by C1, you know, neighborhood commercial, have you ever seen a potential just issue with that being as it's a completely different style of business that's meant to be surrounded by it? You know, a doctor's office may not want to build next to a collision repair. I'm trying to just think of the continuity of that area there.
With this project specifically, it's not, C3 is with our current land use table. This C3 was the only option with a special use permit to open an automobile body and paint shop. Public Works has looked at civil plans. As far as the impact goes, they'll have to make some additional upgrades to the system as far as disposal of things. I don't know too many of the specifics of that. And then directly south of this will be a commercial tire that has been approved and gone through design review. So as far as continuity of uses goes, this is pretty good.
Thank you.
And they'll have enough space for parking. All the cars that are being
approved. When they come back through for design review for the building, they will be required to provide enough parking for the type of use.
Dead cars need a home too.
Right? Yeah, then it's.
I have nothing.
Okay.
Then I would move we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second. Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Well, I'll start. To me, this seems pretty straightforward. You know, a business wants to open. It looks like they just needed to change the zoning for their type of work in a, you know, in a commercial area, and it's not another pizza joint, but, you know,
it'll be a nice
addition to the city, I think, and more commercial is good, so.
Okay,
if there's nothing further, then I would move we approve case number 21-02ZC.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve case number 2102ZC. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you very much.
Hopefully it takes USAA. My wife will need it.
All right, that takes us to business items. Consideration to approve reallocation of capital improvement funds and a contingency request from the enterprise funds. Bobby Withrow.
Mayor, Council, for the record, Bobby Withrow, 270 South Orchard. If you remember, a few months ago I came before you and we talked about potentially buying property, the property 371 Shortline for the future expansion for the Parks Department shop and Fleet Services. We're starting to get to the point where we're going to be closing on the property, and Jared wanted me to clean things up. That way it's easier for him when they do the audit. So tonight I'm asking to reallocate the following capital improvement projects, parkland improvements, skate park expansion, and the remainder of the park admin and pathways extension in the amount of $1,540,000. I will be putting the skate park expansion and the pathway extensions into the budget for next year, so that way we don't lose out on those. And I'm also asking for a contingency request for the remainder of the $1.9 million price tag on the land in the shop. That will be coming out of the enterprise funds. I talked with Paul, he did okay it. And the request comes from the wastewater fund, $151,200 from the water fund, $151,200, and the PI fund, $57,600. With that, I stand for questions.
Remind me again when this closes, soon?
March 11th.
Okay. Pretty straightforward. The opportunity was there to buy a great piece of property for expansion of our parks and department, as well as fleet maintenance. It butts right up to the future Helen Zamzo Park, so kind of a no-brainer to do this, and this is just the technicality of cleaning everything up, then good to go. Mr. Bruce, anything?
No, sir.
Okay. With that, then I would move to approve reallocation of capital improvement funds as such that Bobby stated, for the and the contingency request from the enterprise funds.
Second that.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the reallocation request as listed in the memorandum. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. That takes us to B, consideration to approve case number 2105 LLA, a lot line adjustment on lots 3 and 4, block 12 of Ashton Estates subdivision. Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Thank you for the time tonight to discuss this project. For the record, Troy B. Hunan, Kuna Planning and Zoning Department. Staff, 751 West 4th Street here in Kuna, Idaho. This is a very straightforward application before you this evening. The request is to adjust the lot line between two existing parcels within the previously improved and final platted Ashton Estates number 2 subdivision. The total is approximately 2.3 acres for both parcels, and it is owned by the same person, so makes it very, very clean that way. This is a commercial subdivision. It is currently zoned C1. They're not asking for anything other than just moving the lot lines between the two parcels, or the two lots, because the owner doesn't need quite as much space, and it'll make room for other commercial enterprises. Subject sites are specifically located at 1035 and 1097 North Jackson Mill Avenue here in Kuna. Staff's determined that the, they are also legally known as lots 3 and 4 within the Ashton Estates number 2 subdivision. Staff has determined that the application before you tonight is compliant with the comprehensive plan map, and Kuna City Code and Idaho Code. Should council approve this request, staff does recommend that the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in Section 7 of the staff memo, and I will sit for any questions that you might have. And the applicant is here to answer questions.
Questions for Troy?
No? pretty straightforward.
Did the applicant wish to have a moment of glory in the sun?
Evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Stephanie Hopkins with KM Engineering, 5725 North Discovery Way in Boise, 83713. Troy covered our application very well. I don't have anything to add. We're in agreement with the staff report, so I'll stand for questions if you have them.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, seems pretty straightforward. I would move we approve case number 2105 LLA.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve case number 2105 LLA. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you very much. That takes us to consideration to approve case number 2109-LS, lot split at 721 North Linder. Jessica Reed.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. For the record, Jessica Reed, Planner 1, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA. Applicant Frederick Wheeler requests approval to split his approximately 0.758-acre parcel located at 721 North Linder into two. The front parcel is proposed to be approximately 0.271 acres, and the rear is proposed to be approximately 0.459. There is no request to change the property's current R6 medium-density residential zone, and the applicant intends to construct a duplex, and should that not fit, a single-family dwelling on the rear parcel in the future. Upon review, staff has determined this request appears consistent with CUNA City Code and recommends that if council approves this case, the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in Section 7 of this report. And with that, I will sit for any questions.
Okay, questions for Jessica?
If I may, Mayor, as soon as I saw this, I'm sorry, Jessica, I didn't look at this before, Mark Bybee, City Attorney. I had a question just about whether, I'm assuming this is being split so that there will be a parcel that doesn't have frontage on the road.
Correct.
Is there going to be an easement dedication required before this is split so that we don't have a landlocked parcel without access?
That is correct, sir. It is a condition of approval in the staff report to record an access easement.
All right. So sorry that I didn't see
no,
that.
No, you're good.
I see this issue a lot, so.
The blue road that goes through there doesn't count, right?
No, unfortunately.
Orts and Venice.
Hmm?
Orts and Venice, right?
Okay. Okay. And is the applicant here? Yeah. Did you want to say anything?
I don't know if there's anything to add.
Okay. I just don't want to deny you of your chance to be famous.
Get on the record.
Okay. All right, then. If there's no other questions for anybody, I would move we approve case number 21-09LS.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve case number 2109LS. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you very much. And that is all we had on the agenda tonight. Have any other comments or announcements except for the fact that Jace has left us now? And Doug, welcome aboard.
Welcome, Doug.
He's now head of the fine P&Z department. Looking forward to having him on our team. team of directors. Congratulations. We all got chances to make fun of Jace today before he left.
Good.
Jessica only cried a little bit. I got a little choked.
I think Doug's all right. He didn't kick me out when I showed up last week, so. Keep him.
All right. That's all we have tonight. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.